Chapter 13. I jump to my feet. Jamie has been playing me. Every stride we ran together was one step closer to roping me into their plan. And I had actually thought, felt something for the person who was so kind, funny, and sympathetic. I am such a fool. Oh, hells no, I say, voice raising. I don't want anything to do with yous. Three quick paces and I reach the doorway and Jamie. Take me back to the funeral home, now, and stay the hell away from me. If you contact me again, I'll blow my entire trust fund on lawyers to get you for harassment. I'll blab. I expect Jamie to block my path. Instead, he steps aside after giving me a look somewhere between pity and disappointment. How dare he? I stomp down the hallway, Jamie and Ron following close behind. We drive in silence, and they drop me off at the funeral home. As I undo my seatbelt, Ron finally speaks. The investigation will give closure to your community. Healing to people who are grieving. Knowledge to people who need to know the truth about your uncle's death and your best friend's murder. Justice to the ones responsible for it all. Donis, you have the ability to help your family, your loved ones, and your community. Please think about it and let us know if you're on board. I slam the car door and don't look back. The next day, I'm still shaking with anger as I sit next to Granny June at Lily's funeral. Granny has aged 20 years in the past 4 days. She rests her head against me, as if I am a sturdy oak. I can be that for her. Today, the final day, Lily will come back to say goodbye and then cross over. Art will let the ceremonial fire go out tonight after supper. Once the last ember fades, the fire is lit in the next world, where it will burn without end for her. I haven't run since the powwow. My body protests this newer new normal. I'm exhausted and cannot think clearly. All I do is eat. I'm constantly grazing. Pants won't zip over my distended stomach, so I wear the only thing that fits, a shapeless orange dress. Mom and Auntie are in the second row, directly behind us. They pat our shoulders at random intervals. Maggie is on Granny June's other side, along with Lily's two youngest siblings. Does Lily's other sibling even know what's happened? Throughout the past 4 days, whenever my mother has been at the funeral home or here at the tiny Catholic church, she hovers. Every trip I take to the food table or even to pee, she's two steps behind me, asking if she can get me anything, asking how I feel. I caught myself drafting a text to Lily. Me, swear to God, Mom's bugging the shit out of me. She won't ever reply. One of the tribal council members walks down the aisle and makes the sign of the cross beside Lily's open casket. I look around for any other council members. 2 out of 10 leaders, both women. One is a distant cousin of Granny June's. The other is someone who travels frequently to Washington, D.C. to represent the tribe. I'm not surprised by the lack of council presence. Lily was a descendant, not an enrolled tribal citizen like Travis. Their funerals are both today, the fourth day, per the traditional Ojibwe teachings. Travis is a murderer, but he's also from one of Sugar Island's largest families. Council members are paying their respects at the Elder Center with the Flint family of voters. My aunt squeezes my shoulder before approaching the lectern near the open casket. Granny asked me to give Sema to Teddy before asking her to speak at the funeral mass. Auntie clears her throat. She introduces herself and says a prayer in Anishinaabe Moin. Then she translates what she just said into English. Hello, my name is Teddy Firekeeper, Bear Clan, from the place of the Rapids. We pray for Lily June Chippewa. Creator knows her by her spirit name, Thunderbird Woman. We are thankful for the time we shared with her. We honor her gifts. We wish her a good journey. We keep her love in our hearts. Thank you most greatly, Creator. That is all. After the prayer, she adds, The burial at the cemetery on Sugar Island will take place immediately after the Mass. The ferry tickets are covered. On behalf of Granny June and Maggie, I invite everyone to my home for supper after the burial. Her voice cracks. Everyone who loves Lily Bun is welcome. I choke up at the sound of Lily's new name, indicating she is now in a different time and place. We traditionally add Ebon after someone has changed worlds. The funeral mass begins with Amazing Grace, sung in Anishinaabe Moin. It is beautiful, layers of sorrow and salvation. Many tribal members, including Maggie, are Catholic. Others, like Auntie and Granny June, keep the church at a distance because the churches operated some of the Indian boarding schools along with the federal government. Granny June told Lily and me, "They came for our ceremonies and then for our children." She didn't say, "They came for my children." Why didn't she tell us about her daughters? Did she want to protect us? When we recite the Lord's Prayer in Anishinaabe Moin, the words stick in my throat. Minshinang nungam gijiguk. Imbakwe jiniganinan minik wayang endaso gijigug. Bunigide towa wishinang gawin. Eji nishkiguzian. Eji bonige towan nigidewa. Ga eji nishkanawe win gidwa. Gego gaye. Eji wiji kingagen. Gagwe debening we winning. Midash midawe nimiyang. Dash majin kamigag aho. Ron's words about closure and justice come to mind. Does closure come from forgiving others and being forgiven for our failings? Do we resist temptation from evil by believing in a righteous justice? My thoughts and the words to the prayer swirl around me and continue outside. As if following their path, I look behind me and see Levi standing next to Jamie. My brother catches my eye and gives a gentle smile. Emotion washes over me. He chose to be here, to pay his respects to Lily instead of being at the Elder Center on Sugar Island. Travis was his longtime friend. Levi chose me. 100 tiny needles stab the inside of my nose. It isn't until the funeral director is closing the casket lid that it hits me. This is it. The last time I'll ever see Lily. I want more. This isn't fair. I want to shout for him to stop. Just one more look. I failed her. That bird flying into the window was a warning. My chance to stop the third bad thing. Instead, I spent time showing the new guy around town. Each time Jamie's eyes sparkled and laughter tugged at his scar, I felt desire and guilt. I'm so sorry, Lily. I wipe away hot, angry tears with the sleeve of my pumpkin dress. Toward the end, the priest walks around Lily's casket, dangling a shiny gold vessel on a chain. Smoke rises from the incense. Church smudge, Granny has always called it. We stand as 6 men in dark suits approach the casket. My brother is one. So is TJ. His black suit jacket is enormous. TJ was always a big guy, but he's bulked up even more. 2 years of college football will do that. He surprised everyone when he left Central Michigan University for the police academy, and again when he came home this summer for a job with tribal police. How dare TJ come to Lily's funeral? Pretend to be a good guy, a helpful pallbearer? Why do all the liars find their way to me? Because all men are liars. Except Uncle David. He was good and tried to help the FBI. He didn't lie. He just didn't disclose the truth. He was trying to protect me and Mom. I failed him, too. They escort the polished wood casket past us. Granny June holds my hand so tightly I nearly cry out in pain. Lily's family leads the recessional, but Granny and I remain behind. Her body shakes. I embrace her, absorbing her sorrow. I am her oak tree. A few people approach us to offer comfort to Lily's great-grandmother, but she is still inside my sanctuary. Auntie accepts their hugs as proxy. I help Granny June into my mother's car. Mom sobs quietly at the steering wheel. I shut the car door and glance across the lot. Then I see her, and my blood boils. Angie Flint, Travis's mother, has the audacity to be here. She stands beside Travis's rusted pickup truck at the far edge of the funeral home parking lot, looking lost. I tell Mom I'll ride with Levi, before stomping across the blacktop. I'm nearly to Travis's truck when my brother intercepts me. "Donis," Levi says cautiously, "don't do anything." Angie's eyes widen when she sees me approach, but she quickly looks away, her eyes darting anywhere but at me. "What are you doing here?" I snarl. Travis's funeral must be later today or this evening. The cigarette in her fingers tumbles to the ground. "I came to pay my respects." The meth queen cries some Crocodilus Niloticus tears. Most of the cars have followed the hearse behind my mother and auntie, but a few stay behind, because a good fight, whether at a party or a funeral, is something not to be missed. "Pay them in your own way, but don't you dare show your face here." "She was like a daughter to me," Angie says, steeling herself to meet my glare. "Then it's too bad your son killed her." I start toward her, but someone grasps my upper arm firmly, but not painfully. "This isn't helping the situation," Jamie says into my ear as he pulls me away. I want to charge at Travis's mother and watch her cower. I know she wasn't the one who pulled the trigger, but she's the one in front of me, and this rage feels so much better than grief. Levi puts his arm around Angie, comforting her, and she looks at him gratefully. TJ stands next to his enormous red pickup truck, watching the entire spectacle. "Gawk much?" I shout at him. "You never should have come home. Protect and serve? What a crock of shit. We don't need you." "Donis, this is bigger than TJ," Jamie urges in a low voice. "Bigger than Travis and his mom. Can't you see this is going to keep happening over and over? More funerals, more pain." Even as my heart pounds in my chest, I know he's right. I don't want anyone else to feel such heartache. The most horrible thought comes to me. What if this ever touches the twins? I couldn't live with myself. I take a deep breath and pick up the scent of the cedar bush a few feet away. Gijig, one of our traditional medicines, the one we use for protection. "Donis," Jamie says softly, "let's go to the cemetery, to Lily. You ready?" "Just give me a second. There's something I have to do first." I kick off my black patent leather stilettos, shiny like polished onyx. Jamie frowns in confusion. Lily made me buy them at the mall across the river. She called them fuck me shoes. At first, I balked at adding 4 inches to my height. Her eyes danced as she handed me the shoebox. "Trust me, you need this." "What, the heels or a good snag?" "Both." I wore them today because anything connecting me to Lily felt like the right thing to wear to her funeral. Auntie's friends made tobacco ties for Lily's wake and funeral, to use with our prayers. I take mine from my pumpkin dress pocket, untie the yarn, and release the pinch of Samo with my prayer. I give thanks for the gijig before I break off 2 flat sprigs. I place 1 in each shoe before slipping my feet back inside. Auntie does this before meeting with council. Gijig protects us from bad intentions. I, too, need any help I can get because I've made my decision. I'm going to be their confidential informant. I'll find out what led to Travis killing Lily, what Uncle David found out, and who killed him. I pull myself up to my full height. My spine is a steel rod. I tower over Jamie. I give 1 more glare at TJ across the parking lot. I will protect my community. Me. The stilettos aren't fuck me shoes. They're fuck you shoes. "Yes," I tell Jamie. "I'm ready."